Welcome to the Mike and Doug Show, a production of Aim for Truth and Americans for Innovation. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Doug.
You have got fresh stuff. You just hit me with one of them before the show, and that's, and I just reel back at the audacity of the corporate rich and elite in World War II to make sure to completely capitalize on ripping off the countries that were involved in the war. And it's real plain. And I have to say that one of our listeners a long time ago, who became a good friend, put me onto the case of Edwin Pauly. And today, when you're talking about the Marshall Plan, we have to remember that Edwin Pauly became Sir Edwin Pauly, because he was serving the Queen the whole time. And a little statistic for all those out there who love statistics, 26% of the $17 billion spent on the Marshall Plan went to the Brits. And in less than a year, they were 100% recovered, and they didn't need it those other years. So when we're talking about the Marshall Plan, you're talking about corruption that was refined after World War One, so that after World War II, it was absolutely a well-oiled machine. So Tell us what you have pulled up from the mines, because I didn't know most of this stuff.
I didn't either. And what we're seeing is there is this very clear attempt by historians not to tell us this. And I had no idea that many in Congress, Senate and House, were all over these monopolies to first investigate them, and with an obvious intent to do something about it. But as we saw with World War One, we see that that was a fabrication, that all of the claims of German atrocities were largely untrue, and some of the big propaganda stories were untrue. So this, we suspected that we would find the same pattern in World War II, and that's now just emerging. And as we talked about last week, we had seen the pattern in the creation of the Korean War, which occurred, I think, like a month before a committee reported on the role of the foundations, specifically Rockefeller, Carnegie, and what was the other one? And Ford, in the interlocking directorships that they had discovered. But if we go back to World War II, we suspected we would see some sort of correlation. And sure enough, it's now emerging that Hitler rolled into Poland 3 months before a committee, which had convened the previous year in June of 1938. It was a special joint committee of House and Senate, and they were heavily funded, and they were given carte blanche to investigate monopolies and what we do about them. That was the topic. And they had issued at least 22 reports. We've now gotten our hands on about three or four of them. And we also have the resolution that Congress passed to authorize this committee, which spanned two Congresses. And to summarize where we are so far, we're still reading like crazy. But the report that they had prepared, report number 22, was specifically on the banking monopolies, J.P. Morgan, Morgan Stanley, Goldman Sachs, Lehman Brothers, Harriman, Bankers Trust, that group of monopolies. And so far in reading the report, which is like 2,200 pages long, they nailed it. Whoever was doing this investigation, these people were good. And this information named names, gave dates, and it is when you read through the brand names that are associated in this report, you're going to see these same names today. And clearly what happened after that event is very telling to us in terms of our history. But bottom line is, we, as the committee got going in June of 1938, Hitler started rattling more sabers in Germany, and he kept cranking it up. So by the time the hearings had started in January of 1939, he gets up in the Reichstag speech and declares that if Germany goes to war, that the Jewish race in Germany will be annihilated, will be wiped off. He threatened that in January. And then by the end of that year, he then rolled into Poland. About 3 months before the big report of this committee on banking monopolies. So what we're now seeing, Douglas, is a clear pattern that one of the purposes of creating wars and false flag wars is so that Congress would never be able to devote the time and resources to fully exposing this Pilgrim Society drive for a socialist one world government with the elites on top. And so each time we see a war, including Vietnam, we're also seeing some investigation that was exposing them. And what we now see is that all of these various investigations have been buried in history. The documents are there, but they're very hard to get. And you've got to know what you're looking for in order to go get them. And I will say that the trigger that caused this new line of investigation was the report that Congress prepared on the interlocking directorships, and then specifically the executive committee of the Marshall Plan in 1938 that was formed. And there's a list of about 300 people, including the executive committee. And what our researchers are doing right now is just going through each person who's named on this committee. A lot of the names we don't know, some we do, are familiar with, but a lot we don't. And those ones that we don't are pregnant with meaning. And we're seeing, as we search on these people's names to find out who they are, we're finding references to these other reports that have been buried by history. And so our congressmen and senators were trying very hard to open this thing up when the Pilgrim Society were on a roll back in the 30s. And this is when David Sarnoff had, and this was about the same time, by the way, I just thought of that, when David Sarnoff announced the formation of NBC. I think that was in 38 also. So here we see, and Sarnoff was heavy into building war toys for the Navy and the military. So we see all these parallel events. And so, we're still kind of trying to get our hands on all this data, but what we see is that our history, again, was not written to tell us the truth.
Boy, that's a fact. And interlocking directorships. I love it when you brought that up from the mines and put some light on it. I just have to laugh because it's always a nice name that literally when you say it in the Congress, it's okay. You know, they can actually put that into some law. As a matter of fact, what we find out is that you have brought to light again and again that it's read into the congressional record the crimes of these syndicates, of these cabals, and of the Pilgrim Society and its attempt to continue its nefarious control of America. But really, what is interlocking directorships? That is another name for military-industrial complex.
Exactly.
That's a name for the bankers who own Fortune 500 companies. And how did they get the big bucks to buy the big, expensive stock? Well, from war, of course. And what you pointed out, and it's the same thing they did before. So let me just go back a little bit. World War One. In World War One, who controlled the petroleum? Standard Oil. It became so rich, the Rockefellers, that they had to split it up with an antitrust suit, and it became seven companies. But in the end, or very quickly thereof, those seven companies were all as large as Standard Oil as soon as it was broken up. So a government-backed monopoly is what we're talking about here. And during war, people are given control of entire sectors. But during World War One, it was given to one man. His name is Charles Dawes, and later the Secretary of State. But he was, it's always given to like the most ruthless person who is in some way legally connected to the richest people the robber barons, to protect their interests. So what we get to see is that Charles Dawes in World War I controlled everything, the flow of everything, even oil. He gave out to his buddies certain sectors that they'd be in charge of, whether it be Carnegie and Steel, or whether it be Rockefeller and oil, whether it be Sarnoff and carrying over the British theft of, you know, the Marconi farce of stealing Tesla's patents into America. We have exposed this again and again and again, but the picture is becoming fuller. And when you brought the Marshall Plan forward, basically the Marshall Plan is Charles Dawes on steroids. Because Charles Dawes tried to say to Germany, you owe reparations, and we are going to charge you those reparations, which is insanity. So the reparations were paid with inflated money, and we've gone into all of this. And they had to make Germany evil. But in the end, around 1930, I believe it was, the Bank for International Settlements took over the reparations of Germany, and it became so corrupt because they started stealing. Why did they steal? Because when a country has been bombed or blown up by America, World War I, World War II, we go back in, and it's our companies that have the monopoly to rebuild the countries we just bombed. So think of this.
Great deal, huh?
Yeah.
Make your own business.
Yeah, the bombs were built with banker money. Both sides paid the bankers to destroy it all. Then both sides pay the bankers to rebuild it. And so Germany becomes our best friend.
And by the way, the gunpowder is all sold to them by the British.
And this is the big issue. In America, after World War II, well, they got to see what happened after World War I. Well, World War II started. Well, how did they get militarized again? Well, that's because the companies that made the things for Germany, including all their banking prior to World War II, but also even partially in World War I and certainly right after World War I, was American. So America got all the contracts. And so Charles Dawes was in charge of everything. He was in charge of all the conquered countries and all the victors from Russia to America and back again. And he, of course, had tremendous power, and this was seen by everyone. And so anytime you have a war board, and the war board is in charge of the supplies, basically right into that concept that the corporatists are going to come, and they're going to get their piece of the pie. So the Marshall Plan is—
When you say piece of the pie, that makes them look like an opportunist, not a instigator. And I think what we need to do is start recognizing they created this pie that they are now going to carve up. So they knew how big the pie was going to be. So they had already agreed what they were going to get out of it.
It was their favorite pie, and it had so much whipped cream on it that it was stacked up. And
yes,
it was cherry and nuts on top, and it was just absolutely perfect. Because after World War II, the Marshall Plan, which, of course, was created by a guy who could have been the chief general of the whole war, and some say he was the genius of the war, but Eisenhower got the credit. George Marshall comes over and makes Montague's plan. Morgenthau. Morgenthau, the person who would put forth the first plan for reconstruction of Europe with reparations for Germany. Well, no, George Marshall said, we're going to give them, I think our part was $5.7 billion. You can correct me on the numbers. Totally, at first, it was like $12 billion, and over 3 years, $17 billion. Multiply that times 10 for today's money. We're going to give that to the people who just created the second war in a row on the same ground, pulled us in through false flag and propaganda, and we're going to rebuild it. For who? For the corporatists, not for Americans, not for we the people.
Can I add a new fact? This fact just came out yesterday or the day before. We always talk about the names we know. There's another name that we need to put into our vocabulary. His name is James S. Patterson. And James S. Patterson first came up because he was assigned to be the chairman of the committee to promote the Marshall Plan that was created in 1947 or 48. And I had never heard of Patterson, looked up his name, and interestingly, he was Secretary of War in the First World War, and then he was Roosevelt's Secretary of War in the Second World War. And yet, who's heard of this guy? Now, I can't even tell you how we got to this, but we then discovered that in lawsuits that were filed in the early, in the 20s, related to the Carnegie Estate, we find James S. Patterson's name coming up as one of the executor attorneys for the Carnegie Estate. Now, what we're trying to do now is get his confirmation hearing documents. My bet is we're not going to be able to find this one. But he should have disclosed that he was related to the Carnegie Foundation in such an intimate way. So here we have a beneficiary of the, and you know, when you have an attorney is considered a beneficiary party to the client. So they act as one. And that's why an attorney's words in court can get you in trouble, even if you didn't say them. If your attorney said them, it's possible you can be held to what your attorney says. So here we have the former the executor of the Carnegie Estate running the Marshall Plan and not disclosing it. And then what we see is about 300 people that he put together that he claims, and the publicity at the time claimed, was a nonpartisan group of individuals. But what we see on this committee are a host, dozens, if not more. We haven't gone through everybody, but they are the main proponents of the United Nations and this new Pilgrim's One World Government.
Without a doubt. As a matter of fact, you had brought up the concept that it was a coincidence that, 298 people or something, it's almost a committee of 300. And then we went, oh, wait, is this who they mean? Because the committee of 300 is a conspiracy extracted from a remark of Walter Rathenau from Germany. And so we looked into it, and yeah, but in the end, yeah, there probably are 300 people of these corporatists who are the syndicate. This is the war syndicate that during the Reconstruction, all the rules, they don't apply. During war and Reconstruction, no rules apply. And then once you're in place, the money just keeps flowing. Like, look what happened. And I just want to underscore this. When you say Carnegie, Rockefeller, Ford, what do you think? Oh, they're wonderful foundations for peace.
Right.
You should think war, folks. You
think the opposite.
You should think J.P. Morgan stooges who are there for war. And it is a racketeering. These are racketeering charges. And so when, you know, Standard Oil was broken up, it wasn't quite organized then. But after World War II, it was very, 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 very organized. And so, you know, the Racketeering Influenced and Corrupt Organizations Act, RICO, should have been charged in for World War I, and we should have stopped that nonsense. No, it was made perfect by Edwin Polly, who was the, basically, he was the petroleum czar during the war and after the war. Well, if you can,
by the way, by the way, the Rockefeller, the Standard Oil people are on the Marshall Plan Committee. Surprise, surprise.
I bet you they are. Well, you know, when Edwin Polly took over petroleum, then later, I think he became Secretary of State, and he had all kinds of offices. But he became knighted by the Queen, went to Canada, because basically he had ripped off America so bad that he couldn't really retire in America, and he was charged with all kinds of things. So you get to see how corrupt it became when it was an open turkey shoot. And you get to see a group of 300, the Committee of 300, we're calling them, who are corporatists, who are part of racketeering. And these are government-sponsored monopolies for the military-industrial complex. And yet it's sold for the exact opposite reason. And I want to go to that in a second, but I also cannot slight Prescott Bush,
right,
and Harriman and Brown Brothers. I can't slight Union Bank, or I can't slight Bankers Trust or Brown Brothers and Harriman. Why? Because they were Hitler's bankers.
Douglas, that was the committee report that was buried by the attack on Poland 3 months earlier. So that information, we're reading it now, and it's just like you say, all those banks were being identified for the first time in Congress for the level of complicity that they all had with conspiracies and interlocking directorships. And I haven't read the whole report, but I bet we're going to see funding in Germany.
Well, you get to see this pattern. You see, if you look into history, and because people don't study history, they repeat it. So we repeated what happened after World War One. We didn't want to get into the war. They used propaganda to get us into the war, the sinking of that ship with Americans on it. Oh, that's horrible. The Germans did it. And so it got us into the war, though everyone...
You're talking about the Lusitania?
Yeah. Okay. Everyone in America did not want to go to war in World War One.
That's
everyone.
Correct.
Everyone, even Woodrow Wilson, they had to convince him. But Colonel House and his group, the Inquiry, a bunch of Harvard intellects and a bunch of pilgrims, in all cases, pilgrims and bankers and lawyers for the richest people in the country, they were giving him advice, and it was bad advice. And so basically some horrible things happened after World War One. You have the Balfour Declaration before that. You have the Pikes Pinot-Sykes agreement, dividing up the Levant, which has basically caused all these.
By the way, Balfour, you might as well say Rothschild.
Yeah, exactly. And you say basically the Nation of Israel, which is Zionism. And so what you got to see also is the United Nations was created, the League of Nations was created, which America never voted for. We never got involved. And then it failed catastrophically with a number of events, the League of Nations, and it died. Well, the League of Nations was the idea of British imperialists from the get-go. And you have actually, at one point, literally they used that name, I believe. Or
they did.
You know, and basically say it's an imperialist organization.
In the war cabinet. In the war cabinet. We have the proposal that John Buchan put forward proposing the League of Nations in the British war cabinet in secret discussions.
In other words,
boom,
the League of Nations was to control the world globally through British manipulation. So what happens when it fails miserably, and we didn't even support the treaty, the Paris Treaty for the peace of World War One. We didn't support the League of Nations. Why? Because Americans and in Congress fought it tooth and fang. But you have now brought to light the fact that J.P. Morgan basically bought the rest of the media that wasn't already British controlled, and convinced people that, you know, we should go to continue this military-industrial complex war scenario, and we'd be in World War III if they had their way.
That was in 1912 when he bought up the 25 most leading newspaper. I'm not sure exactly. We're still looking for those contracts, but it talks about him buying editorial control of these newspapers. And I don't know if that means he took control from a stock viewpoint, or whether there was some special agreement that he could put in the editors in the newsroom. And I don't know which we have yet.
Yeah, Lord North and his band of propagandists who had already taken over the East Coast, major media by that time, had to get the rest of the country involved. You're right. I'm sorry. Much earlier date. I'm just saying that in World War One and World War II, the media was completely controlled.
They were driving the American opinion, trying to drive the American opinion in World War One as well. Same group of people.
Well, basically, all you have to do is take, I forget the number. It was not a large number of people, especially for a nice pilgrim's dinner. They have a big pilgrim's dinner. They invite all those editors, and they let them know their power, and they show their power and prestige and throw around a lot of money, and then basically that's it. They're involved in what would be called, I would call it, the Associated Press conspiracy to follow what Reuters Thompson has become, which is nothing more than a Rothschild rag to control banking. And that's what we see all the time, you know, that the U.S. Fed has said something and it affects the market. Complete nonsense. So Edmund Pauly, He controlled the petroleum just as Rockefeller controlled in World War II, after, during and after World War II, during, just as Rockefeller through Charles Dawes controlled it in World War I. Now, look at the power that comes with one position, one single position of being a friend of the person who runs the war cabinet. Or, when you're the Secretary of Defense, you may not run the war cabinet. You can be the Secretary of State and you don't run the war cabinet. The war cabinet is where the deals go down. And this is what happened. And it's very clear to me exactly how simple this is. First off, we had to make an enemy. So Russia had to become our enemy. So in the entire Marshall Plan, it was implied that you had to, that it was being done, complete control of Western Europe and Britain to stop the commies, to stop the communists. As a matter of fact, there was a $2 billion of it went to the CIA and what we call Gladio to basically stay in those countries and control them to make sure that they did what we wanted, because we were getting our contracts, and our contracts needed to be fulfilled as we rebuilt the countries we just bombed, which we knew when we went into the war had nothing to do with the cause of the war that was being stated. So the Russians became our enemy. We created NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, to just band together so that we'd get into another war instantaneously as soon as one of the countries involved in that NATO pact, that NATO treaty, like Turkey, does something insane with Russia, and then boom, we're in war, World War III, just like that. So we had the threat of World War III hanging over us, and then what happens? The Marshall Plan, which only went on for a number of years, though they lengthened it, I think, by 1 year, became two different organizations eventually, and eventually became the organization we now know as USAID. What is that? The United States Agency for International
Development. International Development,
right. Which is a big lie, because it's basically just a way to shift money to our corporations overseas through who it is that actually receives the fiduciary responsibility for USAID, because we can also give out money militarily through weapons and other ways. So the Secretary of State right now, $27 billion a year, USAID, is the continuation of the Marshall Plan that basically states, and during the Marshall Plan, they took 3% of the GDP of America and gave it to Britain, France, and Germany principally. Russia refused to join. Now, why did Russia refuse to join? They had their own plan, and they knew.
Can I interject something there? Yes. We're talking interlocking relationships. When you talk about money going to France and England, you're talking about companies that have interlocking relationships with American companies. And I think when you get into the details of those corporate relationships, you're going to see a lot of that money flowed back to the U.S.
Beyond a shadow of a doubt. Beyond a shadow of a doubt. So the Russians, just like with the United Nations, and by the way, this led in 1930, the United Nations being created, you know, kind of without anybody's attention. And then, boom, bang, then we get the World Bank out of the United Nations. And we get the International Monetary Fund. Oops. And now we have the World Trade Organization. Now we have the World Health Organization. The World Health Organization, as you see by the pandemic, rules the entire world. And an idiot runs it, and he's a communist. He's worse than a communist. He's a terrorist, if you look closely into his history. Now, what I want to point out is that this is sad because it became legal. This is all perfectly legal. That's why they had to fight it in these documents that you've brought forward to try to stop it becoming 100% institutionalized in America. The military-industrial complex, and it's ripping off of Americans, both when they loan us money and when they loan the countries we're fighting money, and when they loan money to us to rebuild, and when they loan money to them to rebuild, and then when they get their cut of everything, you know, they get deals that you can't even imagine. But, you know, look at Britain. From the Marshall Plan, they got 26% of $17 billion at that time, which now is $170 billion. So that was their cut of the pie from simply getting involved in this legal action. But when the legal action happens, they always put someone in charge, don't they? And then that person in charge can do whatever they want, just like Edwin Pauley did until he got caught. Just like James Patterson did.
Yep. And
he got caught because people were preaching against him on the Hill. And the military industrial complex, they get caught, but they keep doing the old British, hide it in a new committee, hide it in a new company name, hide it.
Always hide it in the fog of war. That's what we're seeing. Fog of war is a great deal because first you silence your critics and you make money for yourself. So you win going both ways. And they know that American attention span isn't that long and Congress has a hard time. I mean, think of the amount of political capital that was expended in creating that joint committee to investigate the monopolies. That had to be tremendous. And then all they learned, all they needed is to rattle sabers and start a war, and they'd get Congress to drop it. And that's the pattern they've created over and over again. And then they added the United Nations layer on inside it, and then started writing our laws in such a way that we were bound by treaty with all these UN organizations, which they created and control. So it was the UN, it appears, was a backdoor way of grabbing control of the US, recognizing the Congress and the people were never going to go along with their plan otherwise.
And to your point, Thorkelson and all these other people you've brought forward, They made their testimony and then they were demonized. And you don't see them showing back up being elected again because they did not play to the tune of the...
That's a fascinating element of this because these records exist, but they've been buried in such a way that you have to really want to go get them to even find them because you only see them mentioned tangentially in various histories and never as the driving force of the political agenda, which we now can see has carried on consistently since the late 1800s. These Brits are determined to create this imperial empire.
They're an insidious virus that is invisible. They are so good at propaganda, they're invisible. But let's go over to the Russian plan, the Ruski plan. The Marshall Plan in Russia was called Molotov. Yeah, you know, Molotov cocktail. Yeah, the Molotov dude said, we're not getting involved in this. This isn't right. We're going to do the Comrade program, which he called.
Douglas, come on, what's your Russian accent?
I don't do a good Russian accent. Okay.
No, it's okay.
Okay, so he called it the Brothers Plan. The Brothers Plan, which killed 20 million people. The Marshall Plan, it was corrupt corporatism. But it didn't, it wasn't the Stalin Plan. So the Stalin Plan, really, Molotov, it's like a Molotov cocktail. It's, the best way to burn something down for cheap. So he burnt down a huge part of the economy by simply murdering 20 million people. So that didn't work out. And then all the satellite
companies. And by the way, keep in mind that the Bolsheviks were a creation of Britain as well in the Pilgrim Society. So it appears that their experiment in Russia failed and they lost control of it. And that's why they then had to demonize it. But it also became a useful story for the Cold War, which we grew up in. And it's all a lie. Everything we have learned about this history time period has been a total lie. And what they've learned is once you get the public to believe the lie, then you can create whatever kind of story on top of that you want to, because you'll never get to the source.
My dear friend, Mr. Putin, who is now the president supreme forever, eternal, and after he dies, I think he goes to a Russian heaven. But anyway, who just built that beautiful military church, the church that praises even, Christian militarism. But anyway, good old Putin, we forget this, but he always says it to us. Hey, we were your allies in World War I, World War II, and he mentions other ones, and then and Syria, and he goes, we've always been your ally. Why NATO? Why missiles in the Ukraine? Why do you aim missiles at us in countries that are on our border? Well, it's good to remember that the Cold War, We call it the Cold War because it was supposedly cold with America, but it wasn't cold with the satellite nations of the United Soviet Socialist Republic. The USSR absorbed all the countries around it all the way into Eastern Europe as far as they could, right? They and so really
they carved it up at the Yalta Conference.
Yeah. I mean, into Poland, Czechoslovakia, all these places. And you say, oh, that's right. Well, that wasn't long ago. And so the grab that happened at that time was from a megalomaniac, insane person, Stalin. Oh, well, now we have one, and his name is Putin. And I do not take away the possibility that Putin is always trying to undermine everybody and fight for his own country and steal whatever he can. Yes, he can. He's a mafia boss. What would we expect? He's an oligarch. What would we expect? He learned corporatism from America. He learned corporatism from Hillary and Bill Clinton personally when they built the city of, how do you say it? Skoklovo for them. So remember that the Russians were saying, heck no, we're not going to buy into, especially the Bretton Woods Agreement, which happened 10 years after the founding of the United Nations. They met, and it was basically led by two people. One who was the head economist of Britain, and one who was found out later was in fact the head economist who spoke very good English for the Russians. The Russians did not participate in all of these United Nations formations of the International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, the World Trade Organization, which were all the plan of Harry Dexter White, who was a communist.
And oh, by the way, you mentioned Bretton Woods. A number of the delegates to Bretton Woods were in the Marshall Plan Committee of 300. I want to point that out.
Now, I certainly want to underscore when we say the Committee of 300 that I would have to say, and I think you'd probably agree, I don't know if I've said this crazy thing to you, but I'd say every one of those suckers is a pilgrim.
Oh, I'm sure of it. They obviously know each other. They're obviously very comfortable with their membership on that committee. It looks like it was a feeding frenzy, and we've seen this pattern now. Whenever there is a seminal event in the Pilgrim Society organization of this New World Order, there is like a lemming. They appear together like lemmings. We see this list again and again now through history. We see it. We saw it at the First Imperial Press Conference. Then we saw it in the companies that supported RCA and NBC in the development of the U.S. military industrial complex. We see this list now with the Marshall Plan Committee. Then we see this list again in 1993 after Clinton came to power. The Carnegie Endowment for Peace organized this all hands on deck meeting with a list, three page list of companies who were wanting to give all, wanted to in unison give the FBI a backdoor key to all encryption for the emerging internet. And that list is actually up on the AFI timeline. And then we see that list again with the founding of the IBM Eclipse Foundation, where they stole our social networking technology and then redistributed it as, quote, open source to everyone on the feeding frenzy list. This is the same group of people. They come together when they're feeling their oats and when they want to act in unison. And so now it's a pattern. Before, it's just a big list that took forever to dig through. But we've got a lot of researchers that have been digging at this since probably 2012 after the Supreme Court turned us down. So it's a common list now, and I think if people will look at the data, they'll see that while it is a big and intimidating list, it has its limits, and now the chickens are starting to fly home to the roost.
In America, it's a syndicate of racketeering, and we have pointed out who all these people are, but they fly under legal banners because we create laws in America that nobody even know exist, that were actually written by the lawyers of the bankers. And right. the people who pass these laws, they do not read them and they do not think about the implications of them. But let's just go back to interlocking directorships. You had pointed out through your research, and it is just absolutely staggering. And yes, I want to insult Sir Jeffrey Patty by calling him Sir Patty Cake. You want to know why? Because once you put up a list of all of the Queen-owned companies, the companies the Queen owned, and all of the corrupt people of the Privy Council owned, Jeffrey Patty sat on every one of them. I think it was like 200 mm-hmm. of the major companies that rule Britain. And he supposedly goes to every one of these meetings. No, this is called interlocking directorships. Now you say, but wait a second. Don't tell me, because when do they meet? They don't meet just at Pilgrim Society meetings. They don't meet when they go to their secret dress-up Knights of Malta meetings. They're not doing their free Masonic handshakes. And they're not just the Empire Press Union. They're not just the media. They're all of that. And remember that their 200-year plan of British imperial hegemony was laid out. They're still following the plan. They don't need to talk to anybody. When they get together and they eat their Pilgrim Society meals, they all know what the agenda is. It's been right. the same agenda this entire time.
Let me bring up one issue which some people ask, and that is, what, 200 years? That's three or four generations. How is it possible that somebody could sustain an agenda for that long? And I asked that question. If you go back and you look at Cecil Rhodes's writings, he talked about something called incrementalism, which they practiced then and they practice today. They took that recommendation to heart. And the basic idea there is that you can't push this agenda too fast, because eventually the citizens of the country that you're trying to attack or take over are going to get wise and they're going to throw you out. So incrementalism, in other words, sneaky little changes, were put forward since the late 1800s to this day to get us where we are. And the way they kept the generations involved is each generation passed those secrets to the next, to their children and the grandchildren, and now sometimes to the great-grandchildren. And they benefited economically from the time they were little. And by the time they were an adult, they'd been so compromised that they were sucked into this dysfunction. And so we've got this New World Order dysfunction. And then we add the British aristocracy layer and the knighthoods and the ladies and the baronesses and the dukes and the duchess and the sirs. You add that whole layer of haughtiness on top of it, you create an interesting mix, a brew of motivations to have the next generation carry forward your agenda. So here we have, what is it, the fourth Baron Lord Rothschild, or fourth Lord Rothschild now, or Baron, he's actually a Baron, who is out there now schmoozing our Supreme Court and John Roberts and who's the new guy?
Not Gorsuch, but the
Gorsuch. Yeah, we have a picture of him with Gorsuch.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. At that London conference a couple of years ago. So we have these people who have been schooled in incrementalism. So they know that in their lifetimes, they may or may not see the ultimate objective of this new world order. Although I think a lot of them who have moved into practices of Luciferianism and Satanism, so they actually think that technology may actually give them immortality. So they're really hoping that a lot of these new technology inventions are going to give them that life that they've dreamed of. Whether that's true or not, incrementalism is the way they have kept control.
Yes, and intermarrying, you know, intermarrying all these bank families. When you start looking at this, that's the part that blew my mind when I found out De Worms was a inherited N.M. Rothschild's entire fortune. Whoa, that completely blew my mind.
Or okay, let me point out that the Worms did inherit his mother's Rothschild fortune. It was Roseberry that inherited the main N.M. Rothschild stock fortune.
I can't keep track of the trillions.
I know. They're buddies. They were buddies, so you got them on the same shelf.
But they're, and then they all, you know, I don't drink, when you're drinking Ceylon tea, make sure you thank the Rothschilds. And you're going, what? It comes from the Rothschild plantation on Ceylon. Okay. So you say, well, wait a second. So a lot of these things really are not conspiracy theories. No, they are not. Once you do the homework, but it takes a huge amount of effort to do this. And we have to thank you for all that you do with all the many people and for Betsy and her team. Holy
yes,
Lord.
Thank you to the team.
Every day I get up and I just bombarded with all the amazing things that are happening in and around the work of Aim for Truth and Americans for Innovation. But I want to go back to ranting for a moment about the Marshall Plan. Knew full well, absolutely full well, that there was the German gold.
Because yes, that actually is discussed, by the way, in some of these documents.
And Bill Donovan shows up as one of the 300 or something, doesn't he?
Donovan is, yeah. He's on that list.
Okay, well, Donovan found the gold, but we know where part of the gold went. Half of the German gold went to the Bank for International Settlement, where it was being held. That's because of the war reparation debt of World War I. Half of it went to the American banks, Prescott Bush and Harriman's, and the total corrupt Americans that were supporting the war and who were charged with these things. So these aren't conspiracy theories. But there was another part that of the German gold that I say went to the Bank for International Settlements, which then became the most powerful bank in the world by whose appointment or by how did that happen? Oh, well, the only way that you could be the bank that could do international settlements, in other words, do billion-dollar deals, $10 billion, $100 billion deals, is if you had the assets to back it up. Well, did anybody ever ask what the assets of the Bank for International Settlements were? That was the gold that Hitler had stolen from this Spanish, from the French, from all throughout Europe. And it was split up. Part went to America for safekeeping so that the Bushes, Prescott Bush, that would be Granddaddy Bush, and Harriman brother. These are the corrupt people who are still active today. This is, look at Mitt Romney. He's correct. The continuation of that. So this gold that was then stolen from the Japanese, because the Japanese had stolen the gold from the Chinese and everywhere in the East and buried it in the Philippines. Bill Donovan found that gold in multiple caches and multiple hiding places and caves in the ground. And he kept shipping it off to the Bank for International Settlement because they were rogue. And he was becoming so rogue. He was so rogue in the end that he was kind of discredited, but he founded the CIA, which was the OSS, which was the original American response to the British version. So the British really founded all of these things. So the British knew all about this gold. So when you come to the military industrial complex companies, the 300, many of them, especially the banks and asset management companies, are using the gold assets that have yet to be brought back into the market by Bill Donovan and his rogue CIA and the Bank for International Settlement. That's the reason that they are so incredibly powerful.
And so are you saying that our entire current economic system has been based on a fraud?
And gambling. In this case, they're buying, it's basically bank gambling on a very, very, very large level. The banks do this and they manipulate gold and silver and interest rates. And then there's many of them, even central banks in all in America, the 12 banks that support our central bank, they do betting. And that betting is done not on the stock market, it's done through the Bank of International Settlement as the DTCC is the Depositary Trust Clearing Corporation. They are the clearing corporation for the largest illegal bets going on the face of the earth to this very day. Imelda Marcos got some of the money back through an American law suit. I forget what it was, many, many millions. Because why? We stole the money from the Philippines, and the Philippines want to claim it as theirs, and the Japanese want to claim it as theirs. And we all know, for instance, the gold that was at the Bank for International Settlement stolen from the Jews was reclaimed by the Bronfman family not long ago, just a couple years ago, within the last 2 years. They simply went and said, here's the proof that you're holding this gold, and they had to give it up. So when you're talking about the corruption that happened through the Marshall Plan and Edwin Pauli and George Marshall and the whole gang, and I mean gang, this is a racketeering syndicate that is still operative today. The people are still receiving the money through the rat lines that have fed this type of corporatism, the military-industrial complex. It's often
let me add one element to that. In investigating one of the names, no names that we didn't unrecognize names on that list, we discovered a CIA document that had been released in 2002. And there was a stack of documents naming some of the people that were on this Marshall Plan list. And lo and behold, on about page 24, we find a document written by the CIA describing how the CIA was invited to, in this was in 1954, was invited to join a committee that was going to automate the patent office. And there we have hard proof that the CIA, before Serco, was driving the consolidation of all the information about patents. Why? I think so that it's easier to share if it's in electronic form than if it's a piece of paper you got to go to a library to pick up. And so the CIA, and remarkably, there are redacted names on this letter from 1954. So they're still hiding the identities of certain people who were a part of that automation. My guess is they're hiding IBM. They're probably hiding, NCR, but NCR was on this list, by the way, of the Committee of 300. But I think we're going to find that they were hiding RCA and IBM, who were no doubt building those computers that we now have today, the early versions of those. Probably RCA.
This seems to be the hard proof that what you've been saying and proving, that World War I and II were very principally about stealing the patents, the British stealing the German patents. And now we have the CIA, who, you know, access through Five Eyes, the Brits get that too. Serco, a totally British company, gets control of automating our patents. So basically, as we have said, the Brits get the first look at every American patent.
And that is absolutely true.
And they get to choose whatever the heck they want, and they get to rip us off. And all it has to be is national security. Oh, this could be used to be made a weapon. Therefore, we're going to take it from you, Mr. Inventor. And if you ever say a word about it, we're going to put you in jail and charge you $10,000 every time you have ever spoken about it. That's the rules.
Can you imagine what our economy might look like if we were actually rewarding inventors and creative people instead of all this criminality?
Well,
it's just astounding.
I want you to underscore that by the following question. Nobel Peace Prize is given out by a Swedish dude who basically killed so many people we can't count through gunpowder. And then we find that the British had to top that with Mr. Mond. Tell them about Mr. Mond.
Mm-hmm. Alfred Mond. He was the son of a German chemist, and he moved to England, had some processes that basically were the first industries to build gunpowder in Britain. And to this day, they still build gunpowder. The company started off as, I forget the name now, Mond something, Brunner Mond. And at the time of the Imperial Press Conference, he's pictured in those meetings, and his company was called Brunner Mond. Later, they changed the name to Imperial Chemical Industries, ICI, which exists to this day. There are documents that say that he had the monopoly on munitions worldwide, specifically explosives. And he bought the Nobel company that built explosives as well. And in fact, I think to this day, ICI still has a Nobel division involved with the war games.
And gives out rewards and prizes for peace. Peace.
Now, let me throw it into modern day, 1992, ICI has a big split. It's a chemical business, builds bombs, builds gunpowder. In 92, they split, and they split into chemistry, chemicals, and pharmaceuticals, and they started AstraZeneca. And AstraZeneca, all of the original directors for AstraZeneca that we could see, all were former executives of ICI. So they were all the bomb makers, all the warmongers. They all started this drug company. And wouldn't you know it, a few months ago, AstraZeneca announced they had the global, they had the European Union and British contracts to distribute hundreds of millions of vaccines for the coronavirus that doesn't exist. They already have the contract.
Supposedly untested vaccines, but as we pointed out, because AstraZeneca is basically just a branch of Perbright, or taking Perbright's work, carrying it further, that they have 800 million of these already made, untested vaccines ready to go. So whether people will like it or not, it's already been made. Now, this is the evidence, Mond and Nobel and Rothschild and all these people, these are arms dealers.
Yes.
These are arms dealers who became drug dealers. And then they found out that pharmaceutical death is so much more legal and quiet, and you can get complete immunity. And it's not as messy. Of course, you don't have the rebuilding of everything like with the Marshall Plan, $17 billion to rebuild the places that we bombed. So what we're dealing here with are people who are not people. You know, we get a choice whether we want to move towards being an angel or an animal. These people have moved towards being an animal, and they need to be stopped. And that's what we do, is we call them out, shine the bright spotlight on them, and hope that we can, you know, blind them really with the light. Because, you know, people like George Soros, you know, he must stay down in a bat cave all the time, you know, with the nasty bat stuff dropping on him, because that guy is not a human being. He plans the death of people. Just like the British imperialists, like Cecil Rhodes saw what he could do in South Africa. And he said, I want this for the whole world. So he created, with all his money, after ripping off the gold and the diamonds, he created through his philanthropy, they always use the excuse of charity, through his philanthropy, he sets up a scholarship fund to continue his way of thinking in perpetuity. Yes. Forever.
Yes. And he put Rothschild as his trustee. So here we have the same cast of characters through the generations right to today. And when you look at this list from the Marshall Plan, you're going to recognize most of these companies, because these companies have been the ones that have continued on. And to this day, they have got very good PR. So you're going to feel good about most of these companies' names. But what you need to do is start thinking the opposite. That if I feel good about this company, it's probably bad.
It's kind of like, if they have a British accent, then you trust them, because they only incrementally steal from you. They just tax you. It's just a moderate tax. Why would anyone complain? You know, it's disgusting, but they've done studies that show that if you speak in any accent that is British, that you are more trusted on the television. This is absurd, because the propaganda of the British has been so pervasive, as we have pointed out here today, that though they hide behind the scenes, they are still active. And Jeffrey Patty, we know that you have the Queen's shares, and we know what's in her purse, and we're coming after you every single day until we show that you are, in fact, a very, very dark soul, along with your other buddies, the syndicates that have been described both from the British Committee of 300 and the Privy Council, and the American Corporatist Committee of 300, and especially that which ties them together, the Anglo-American Pilgrim Society.